1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
In a world that's perfect, lies a perfect little town, where one team stands alone. But now, something's stirring that will change this place forever.
Perfect. Perfect.
Welcome to Perfectville, your first place podcast for your Miami Dolphins, part of the Believe Network, streaming on Sirius XM. I am Sam Marcoux, and he is the two-time Hall of Famer. Of course, I'm talking about none other than the good doctor himself, Dr. Christopher Colon. Doctor, how in the hell are you, my friend?
Hey, buddy. Football starting. We've got a set of really good college football games this weekend. My son's playing football in full gear. It's the week's ending, and the Miami Dolphins kicked some serious ass to end their preseason. So all good thoughts right now.
As Dude Love would say back in the day, they kicked some heavy-duty booty. And the most points they've ever scored in a preseason game, I think they won 48-10 against the Eagles. The battle for Ace Ventura's soul is now complete. He stays in South Florida yet again. Ray Finkel can suck it. It wasn't just that they scored 48 points, Chris. I mean, it's always fun to watch your team explode like that, but it was how they did it and when they did it, which is almost as important, especially for a preseason game, because they came out of the gate, first play of the game, 51 yards, the most controversial 51-yard completion known to man between Tua Tagovailoa and Tyreek Hill. Yes, it could have gone for a touchdown if he threw it, 52 yards instead of 51. But nonetheless, it went 51 yards, and I challenge any franchise out there, if your season, week one of the regular season, started with a 51-yard completion, you should be happy, not sad, not questioning, not anything else. But they go on to not only did they complete that, Chris. Oh, by the way, they scored a touchdown like four plays later. So it wasn't like they lost out on points. They got the same amount of points as whether or not Tyreek ran it in or ultimately River Craycraft did. Tua to Tyreek, and I had people calling me from the second it happened going, okay, this is now legit. And then about 10 seconds after that was the overflow of, well, he didn't really throw it that far. Let's just start at the beginning of that game there, Chris. What did you think of the throw from Tua to Tyreek?
It's such a non-story. I don't even want to talk about it. Dan Orlovsky had a great take. He threw it over 50 yards. If people remember, arguably one of the best quarterbacks in the league is Pat Mahomes, threw a very similar wasp pass to Tyreek in the Super Bowl, and everyone thought it was a great thing. They gained 50 yards, five first downs of offense in one play, Sam. That's what we want. Yes, we want him to be hitting stride and score a touchdown. Sure. We got 51 yards. These fans, like I said, the ones that are the negative Nancys and just like live to be negative, are clown shoes. Like they're literally clown shoes. The next play, beautiful fake handoff rolls out to his left, hits Tyreek in perfect stride. He's done for the day, which totally makes sense. And then we run the ball, no gain. And then another rollout, and he hits Crawfield or Crawl.
Craycraft.
And Craycraft in a perfect throw on the run where the corner trailing had absolutely no possibility of defending it. And it was surgical. Surgical is the word. It was surgically done. It's going to help with Tua's confidence. It's going to help with Tyreek's confidence, the whole offense in general. And Sam, one thing I'll mention before I toss it back to you is Waddle was not even on the field. Like, the safety's over the top Tyreek. That's half of our offense, like that wide receiver duo, and Waddle's in street clothes. So I week one cannot get here soon enough.
You kind of stole my thunder there a little bit, and rightfully so. I mean, Jalen Waddle wasn't on the field. Teron Armstead wasn't on the field. So we're doing this with none of our complete and most talented offensive line member, as well as the other half of that wide receiver duo. That's how good Tyreek is, and that's how good that play was, and that's how good Tua was on that play, quite frankly. That River Craycraft touchdown was actually made possible in many ways by the plays that had happened before, but also during that play by Trent Sherfield, number 14, who made the team. We'll talk about that here in just a little bit. Who actually stopped the defenders on that side and forced the inside defender to come down and cover him, which allowed Craycraft to get out of his break and be open in the end zone. Just a beautifully designed play, which again goes back to coaching, goes back to Mike McDaniel. It's going to be a fun year to be a Miami Dolphins fan. And that was just a microcosm. I mean, that's what we needed to see, I think, as Miami Dolphins fans. We needed to see Tua to Tyreek. We needed to see it go yard, or at least go deep. And we got that. And like you said, day is done. One play after that, totally fine by me. Tua showed what he needed to show in the dress rehearsal. Now let's get to New England week one here in a couple of weeks and call it good. That's all I needed to see. But on top of that, if that was the only thing that had happened, which it wasn't, I would have been fine. But Tua looked great beyond that because he did play a little bit longer than that. We only gave up one sack. And really, I think the sack was more on Tua than it was Austin Jackson.
It was.
If you count, it was about 4 seconds, which is more time than I think Tua's ever had in his life, which, again, is bearing the lead. The reason why that whole play was able to happen on the first play of the game was simply because the offensive line did their job, which we aren't used to saying here in the town of Perfectville or when talking about the Miami Dolphins in general. So the offensive line played much better. Tua did what he was supposed to do. Tyreek does what he does. And then you get into a running game with Raheem Mostert,
where he
started to look really, really good. And then you got a pick six by this defense, which said, oh, by the way, you all want to talk about the offense. We're still here. And we're going to talk about how this defense was crafted once we get to the 53-man roster that's been completed as well. But just a great way to end preseason. I think if you could take anything out of preseason, it's no injuries and feeling confident about your team on both offense and defense and special teams, quite frankly. And I think the Miami Dolphins have checked that box as well.
Well, they check the box, and it's one of those things where you get nervous as a Dolphins fan. I actually was holding my Dolphins mug at work and got in the elevator, and this guy comes in with the Dolphins hat on Charlotte, North Carolina, and he goes, "Fins fan?" I'm like,
"No,
obviously."
What are you talking about?
Chargers all the way, baby. Yeah. No. In case he listens to this, good guy. He knew his shit. And we're shooting it, man. We're going. He did not know we cut Lynn Bowden, so I had to ruin his day because he was not happy about that. But we were chatting, and I'm going to kind of articulate kind of like what I said to him is I'm cautiously optimistic, right? We've been here before. We've been burned. But we've also had hype before, and maybe we were blind to the point where we just bought in. This year, we really are truly excited, but cautiously, because we've been here before. That preseason game, Sam, without Armstead, without Waddle, McDaniel opened up the playbook a little bit. We did not look that surgical the first two preseason games. I think he totally went vanilla and basic and kind of showed a little bit of what we're in for in game three against the Eagles. And man, I liked what I saw. Like, there's just, we're finally taking advantage of attacking defenses. You saw what Tua and the other guys have been saying all along is that they have multiple plays out of one set. So they have the handoff, then they have a rollout, then they have, a screen. I mean, there's just so many things out of the same set, and that's without Waddle, and we're motioning tight ends. Baldy had an amazing breakdown of how our offensive line look. We're doing pool plays. We're getting to the second level. Liam Eichenberg is like ear holding DTs on and DNs on trap plays. it's just all things we've been asking for and wanting and seeing other teams do it, and we haven't. So to see the Miami Dolphins, it's almost you have to slap yourself. Am I dreaming? I'm pinching myself. Is that the Dolphins running those plays? And it's something to smile about. And it's a little bit like foreplay. It's foreplay, and season week one against the Patriots is finally penetration to, well, Mac Jones. McCorkle.
Yeah. McCorkle, yeah, we're definitely getting our ass tickled with a feather right now, and it feels good. It feels good. I'm getting ready to sing Yankee Doodle Dandy while that's happening. But yeah, but you know, the other part too, going back, is we didn't have a show for the Raiders game. We looked a little more vanilla, a little more bland in that one.
Yep.
Jason Sanders misses a field goal at the end of the game. No big deal there. He's looked better this year than he did last year. So, you know, a missed field goal in preseason, I think I'm okay with if it kind of recalibrates him.
Get it out of the way.
And also doesn't matter the preseason games. I looked this up the other day because I was, first of all, 1972, the Miami Dolphins 50 years ago go undefeated, as we all know, beat the Redskins, now the Commanders, in the Super Bowl 14-7. They played six preseason games that year, Chris.
Jesus Christ.
Six. They went 3-3.
Each guy made $8 a game.
Yeah, they played half their year and it didn't even count. And
oh my God.
And one of those teams that actually played in preseason that year was the Washington Redskins. So they played them in preseason, lost, and then came back and beat them in the Super Bowl 14-7. So the point is, you can't always read into what happens in preseason and apply it to the regular season, right? But you can look at bits and pieces and start to extrapolate out. This is what you can expect. And even in that Raider game, you know, Tua was in there a brief amount of time. It was a very vanilla offense, but I think he had a QB rating of over 90. He was very accurate, you know, and you combine everything that he's done this offseason and preseason, and he looks like a starting quarterback, which we've known, you and I have known, we've been on, you know, the Tua side of this argument for 2 years and said, we have to be patient. He's coming back from injury. He's got people that don't believe in him, everything that we've already talked about, but to see him actually go out and look the part, I think the Patriots are in for a pounding in two weeks when they come in. They looked as good as we have looked, especially in that last game. They looked equally bad against those same Raiders that last game. I mean, Mac Jones is still trying to figure out which guy is on his team, looking at the at the film of that game. I mean, he looked atrocious.
Yeah, this game is going to be the easiest of our first four. Mm-hmm. So we've got the Patriots at home opener in September. We are notoriously taking advantage of that weather situation, them in their dark uniforms. And to be completely honest, we had Mac Jones numbered last year. So that's the easiest game, because we follow up at Ravens, home Bills, at Bengals, short week, Thursday night football, defending AFC champions. So out of those four, looking at the schedule pre-show, and that's obviously, which is so weird to say, right? The Patriots is the easiest one out of those. But based on just lack of personnel, their cornerback issue looks pretty suspect. Their receivers, he doesn't have many weapons, and Mac Jones is making mistakes. I think that all boils down to, we're a team kind of on this direction going upwards, and the Patriots are kind of middle of the road. Even though they went to the playoffs last year, they didn't do enough to do anything. And I really just feel like that crowd is going to be sold out. It's going to be loud. It's going to be raucous. It's going to have, and there's going to be things that McDaniel hasn't shown, that Belichick has no idea what's coming. It's definitely something where I feel as good about that game as I have about any game in a long time. And it's weird saying that when it's the Patriots.
Yeah. And you know, it's, we're not going to get into a deep preview of the Patriots week one, just because we got another week to do that. And, but let's just be honest. Josh McDaniels is a very good offensive coach. He's gone. They now have this dual offensive coordination,
two failed head coaches
who Bill wanted to make sure had a paycheck. So like, one guy's handling half the offense on the left-hand side and the other guy's handling it on the right-hand side, or whatever the hell they're doing. Unless they've got something else up their sleeve, it just looks like a big disorganized mess. And that plays to our, you know, really plays into our hands. Speaking of that game, my sister and my brother-in-law, they're actually going to that game. They're in 134. They're sitting in the shade on the Dolphins side in the end zone. Just great tickets. And I'm so mad because neither one of them are Dolphins fans, yet they get to go, and I have to go to team pictures for a 10-year-old soccer league. So I'm not even gonna be able to watch it live. My sister, who's a Raider fan, and my brother-in-law, who's a Niner fan, will be, though. So, you know,
is there a way we can petition as your co-host and as fans to change team pictures, because who does team pictures at 10 in the morning on the West Coast during NFL football season? Like, that should be illegal. And soccer ain't that great. I'm sorry. Love you, Chloe. No.
I'll tell you, this happens every year, and it's always that first Sunday of opening week. The only reason I have to go this year is because I am coaching. In the past, I don't care. I'll drop my kid off and then I'm gone. Right. But no, since I'm the head coach, I have to be there. And not for nothing, but the league is run by, I believe, a lady who doesn't watch football, who maybe even hates football.
And you might need to. You might need to bring your phone and just hold it behind the girl, because you're in the back, right? You're the tall one, and just hold it behind the girl. They won't see it in the picture, and you can watch it, you know, watch the game. Because I don't know if it's the kiss of death of you not watching or watching. Where,
well, so I'll say explain. This. The first year that my daughter played in this league, which was a number of years ago, Brian Flores' first year and as a head coach, we got pounded by the Ravens like 56 to 10 or whatever it was. So I was so mad that I was going to miss the opening game. And then I got an update while taking pictures. I'm like, yeah, take your time with the photos. It's going to be fine. So
let's Uber in some food.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the last 2 years, I haven't had to be there for pictures, because it just ended up on a weekend where Chloe's mom had her. So I actually go to this Northern California, it's called La Cabana Dolphins party, and we've won. So I kind of wanted to keep that tradition going, but nope, can't do that. Got to go back to this picture thing. So the history tells me not good things when I show up to picture day, but hopefully that is just a reversed, you know, weird 2019 deal when that happened.
So Mike McDaniel's the type of coach, if you threw down a reverse Uno card, he'd get the meme. And that's the first coach we've had in years that would. So I feel like, I think the curse is broken. I think you're good.
I think so too. And you know what else is broken is the spirits of a bunch of players who were cut over the past week here, Chris, because the Miami Dolphins finished up preseason against the Philadelphia Eagles and then had to make a cut from 80 players down to 53. They didn't take too long. They actually started on Sunday, even though they had until, I believe, Tuesday to get that all done, Chris, but they knew that they weren't going to keep a few people, and they let them loose. I'm not going to go through the whole list here. I'll break down the positions. Three quarterbacks, which was somewhat controversial, except for the fact that Skylar Thompson forced us to keep him. Five running backs, which that includes a fullback, so nothing too crazy there. There was talk amongst fans and journalists that they would keep up to seven wide receivers. The Dolphins keep five, which is the traditional amount. Eight offensive linemen, five tight ends. So that is your offensive breakdown. Nine defensive linemen, nine cornerbacks, eight linebackers, if I'm not mistaken, or nine linebackers, excuse me, six defensive line, nine defensive backs, and one Noah Igbinoghene. So that's the breakdown. Plus you have your punt returner. I'm sorry, your punter, your kicker, and your long snapper. And that should hopefully make 53 based on my math. But surprised at A, keeping Noah Igbinoghene, surprised at B, Byron Jones, who we all assumed would just be ready for week one, now will not play for that first four games that you talked about. And C, five tight ends, Chris.
I knew tight ends was a big deal in Mike McDaniel's offense. But wow, like five tight ends and a fullback. That is quite a bit. So it's Gesicki, it's Smythe, it's Long, it's...
Tanner Connor, who's injured, four. And then you have Keithan Carter, who I believe is more of a special teamer, but technically a tight
Matt end. Collins type.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you need special teamers. That's a lot. That's a big number. Nothing other than that, Sam, the biggest news is Byron Jones.
Yes.
Byron Jones is the biggest news, which is exciting, because normally you're like, what? Why did we cut that guy? Or why did we do this? And it's like this year, like there really wasn't, like my buddy like messaged me. He's like, we cut Sony Michel. I'm like, meh. Like, why do we have him? Like, why did the Rams let him go? Right. You know, you got to think of those things. You mentioned it, and I'll reverse Uno card you. You mentioned it pre-show. Everybody's up in arms. We cut Lynn Bowden. He's currently unemployed. No one signed him. No one claimed him on waivers. So fans fall in love with guys and they want them to do well. Disappointing, I guess, slightly, that we didn't get a trade partner for Preston Williams and Lynn Bowden, but really not I'm not losing sleep over it. You know, other than that, I mean, we're rolling with a pretty strong roster, man, and I'm feeling good about it.
Yeah, I mean, Preston Williams, no one was going to trade for him because I think his problems are well documented here in Miami. And by the way, I don't know if he was even eligible for waivers, but nobody picked him up on waivers either. So, in fact, nobody other than Benito Jones, who goes to Detroit, got picked up. That was part of the Miami Dolphins, you know, cut and waive list, which proves that our trash was just trash. Now, some of them are coming back to the practice squad. I'm sure some will get picked up somewhere. But the fact that, you know, we were all clamoring over certain people like Lynn Bowden Jr., like Preston Williams, and the fact that they're still not employed 2 days later, you know, it's not like the league was crawling all over themselves to get these guys onto their own rosters elsewhere in the NFL. Right. So I think we made the right decision. I think you're right. There weren't a lot of surprises outside of Byron Jones, which I'm concerned about because I've been talking on this show for the last month or so that the cornerbacks are what scare me, especially with the injuries that we've seen to Trill Williams, Nick Needham. Other people are banged up. We've got undrafted free agents, rookies that have made this team. And of course, we got Noah Igbinoghene, who seems like he's going to be playing a lot this first 4 weeks. And it doesn't look like Chris Greer or Mike McDaniel or anybody else has any interest in adding any sort of starting caliber or anybody who can challenge Noah Igbinoghene. So I guess we're rolling with Noah for the first month of the season, at least, Chris.
I hope Javon Holland and Brandon Jones are very comfortable with playing behind him and not letting anyone pass them, because that Raider game, oof. He was burnt toast, man. Anytime they were in man, he was within 8 yards away from the coverage, trailing and chasing. So that terrifies me. He just has not made any plays that make me think, hey, there's that first round talent Chris Greer saw. It's nothing but negative, and it's something we want to support the players on this team. Like we always, I think our track record proves itself. It comes to a point where you're just like, I cringe when I see number 9 on the field. Like I just really do.
Yeah, even before that Raider game, I mean, you and I were pretty bullish on, hey, maybe Sam Madison and Patrick Surtain can make this happen. And then it was like, oh, never mind. Nope. They can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit. And, I think we can absorb it week one and week two. I don't even know if the Baltimore team outside of Mark Andrews and Rashad Bateman, second-year wide receiver, he's going to be pretty good. But I don't know that they have a ton of talent at the wide receiver position where I think we can, you know, float coverage to that side with our safeties and make it work. But once we get into week three against Buffalo and you got Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis and Dawson Knox and Josh Allen, by the way, and then you get into week four and there's some guy named Jamar Chase and some guy named T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd is their third wide receiver. And it's like, okay, now we have issues. And hopefully by then he's magically figured it out, even though he hasn't in 2.5 years. But that's where I think the issues really lie, is how do you escape Buffalo? How do you escape Cincinnati on a short week and do it with Noah Igbinoghene playing a significant amount of defensive snaps? I just do not know.
I do. Here's how you beat them when you do it. You pass rush and you score more points with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. We're going to have to play
track
offense
race,
differently than we have in the last 5-6 years. We're going to have to play unconservative, 4 wide, go for your throats, and hope our defense can get a turnover here or there. Pass rush needs to get to these guys. I mean, we know Lamar Jackson already bottled him up last year. I mean, like, I've never seen him play as bad as he did in that national TV game last season. But we won't have Byron Jones for it. So how much can you play, you know, cover zero man on an island when Noah Igbinoghene is the guy that's between you and an 80-yard touchdown? So it's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough. Joe Burrow, their line's okay. So hopefully we can get to him. But if we can get out of the stretch for first 4 games, and we're going to get into the season more as, like, you know, the season actually starts and like week one's here. But if we can come out of that 2-2, right?
Oh, that's
that
a stretch, huge win.
And then there's so many easier games, W's on the rest of the schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're jumping ahead. Who knows? Maybe they figure out a way. Maybe Noah isn't the guy that's going to be playing. Maybe Nick Needham is the boundary corner and they throw somebody else on the inside the nickel. And Noah's just there to return punts and fill out a roster. But it's going to be interesting. And you said it. I mean, I think the game plan in general for the Miami Dolphins this year on defense is going to be more pressure on the quarterback. I mean, that was still an area of concern last year. Obviously, Emmanuel Ogba, who has been very silent this preseason, he's there. You have Jalen Phillips, who looks like an actual man this year. He's been very good throughout preseason. And then, oh, by the way, some guy named Melvin Ingram signed as a pass rush specialist. And oh, by the way, this week, Trey Flowers, who when he's not injured is averaging, you know, 7-8 sacks a season in this defensive scheme that he's very familiar with. He's coming in as a situational pass rusher as well. You combine that with Zach Sealer, Christian Wilkins, Raekwon Davis, and that front eight, whatever that is now for the Miami Dolphins in terms of pass rush and rush, if that would be the thing, is very stout and very dangerous and has the ability to maybe mask some of the stuff on the back end that we could see with the cornerbacks in particular. So I'm excited about that. I think that was a really shrewd pickup to get Trey Flowers right here at the end. Another body that knows the system, doesn't need a lot of on-ramping to know exactly what his role is in this. Another veteran and a guy who can come in here and hit the quarterback, you know, hard. So I appreciate that too, which is why I want to say, welcome to Perfectville, Trey Flowers.
Yeah, absolutely welcome. And two out of the first four games early September are going to be at home in Miami. You're going to need a fresh rotation of pass rushers. So if you can have Jalen Phillips playing, which, by the way, Jalen Phillips is playing like a fucking monster.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, he's been absolutely
insane. Unbelievable. And he needs a breather. Here comes Ingram. Here comes Flowers. It's an embarrassment of riches. It was what it is. So really excited about that signing.
Yeah, I am too. And you know, looking at that too, I don't see any other. And here's the other thing. I think the Dolphins are happy with their roster too, because the waivers came out today. The Miami Dolphins, they may have put in some claims, but they didn't get anybody, which means they probably didn't put in a lot, I'm guessing. But no, they just simply are going with this roster right now. I don't see any major changes happening between now and week one against the New England Patriots. Do you see anything happening? Any predictions? Any wild, crazy predictions from Chris Cullen?
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is if a corner comes available, surprisingly, or if a trade happens. But I don't see that happening with Byron just missing four games. I mean, we've invested a lot in that position. So really, no. Like, and that's a good thing, Sam. That's a good thing that we're not sitting there scrounging for scraps from other teams. We are one of those good teams now where we just get rid of the garbage and we like our roster. That's huge. Yeah.
I don't see anything major happening. I mean, there's still some rumors that Mike Gesicki is being shot, but I think Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel actually shut that down this week and said two teams called about him, which, by the way, surprisingly open about the process.
Very.
Two teams called, not, oh yeah, we had some calls here or there, or there was nothing, you know, of interest. No, two teams called. We know that specifically. They didn't call anybody. And they said, basically, he's going to be here. So to me, that tells me that, A, they would listen if there was a trade package available for Mike Gesicki. But the two teams that called obviously didn't have anything worth a shit in terms of what to offer for Mike Gesicki. And at this point, I don't even know what you could get for Mike Gesicki. He's better off being with the Miami Dolphins. And probably why we keep five tight ends is because he's going to be used a lot in the slot as a wide receiver like he has in the past when he's not in line and blocking. So that's probably why. I also see Tanner Connor doesn't look 100% healthy to me, so he could be turned over to IR now and not miss the entire season. So you could stash him for, you know, whatever it is, 10 games, and maybe free up a spot somewhere else on the offensive line or in the defensive back room or something like that if you need to. Just from a procedural standpoint, we may have wanted to hold on to him and keep him until we can actually, you know, shake him loose on the IR later this year. Not quite sure, but minor tweaks, if anything else. If it's going to be anywhere, I think it's going to be into that tight end room in terms of five. That's an odd number to have for tight ends.
It is, and I can see you actually made a great point. I think it's because Gesicki will be more on leaning at receiver at the slot with a tight end, you know, in line to make those blocks for run plays. That's a great point. And if they're not doing that, five is a very odd number.
Well, look at George Kittle. I mean, George Kittle played all over the field for the Niners, right? And much better blocker than Mike Gesicki is, but he lined up in the slot quite a bit. And continues to do so because he's a weapon out there. And what are you going to do? Stick a linebacker on him? Okay, good. He's going to run right past him. And then you can put a safety on him. Good. He's going to bully him and lay down in the flat and just use his body.
And that's where like the optimism comes in, Sam, because you start talking about these guys and you're like, oh, maybe you put a safety on him. You can't. You need a safety over the top Waddle and you need a safety over the top Tyreek Hill. If you don't, those guys are open on the go route. Did you hear what that Eagles safety said? He said he gave him 5-yard cushion. And he's just never seen speed like that. Like he plays in the NFL. That guy has been in 7-7 camps. He's been in the All-American Bowl. He played college football. He's played in the NFL. That's his third team he's played this season in preseason against other NFL players. And he said he's never seen speed like that before. Having that over the top, you have to have a safety there. And that's Gesicki one-on-one on the seam. And it's uncoverable.
Go watch. I know every Dolphins fan has. Every citizen of Perfectville has looked at it already. Go rewatch Tyreek Hill running that route one more time and pay attention to his feet, pay attention to his legs, and realize that this the footage is not being sped up. Because if you look at it, Chris, it looks like somebody sped it up to like 1.25 speed, and it looks cartoonish how fast he's moving and just how fast he eats up the defense. And then Tua, by the way, nobody's giving Tua credit for the fact that he did place the ball in a way where Tyreek could get himself open. Instead of the defensive back maybe being able to jump up and knock the ball down, you know, while right in front of him, he pushes it off to the left a little bit, fades Tua to the center where Tua can grab the ball. Now, Tua even said he wished he'd placed it a little bit further so he can catch him in stride, sure. But he did, in a way, quote unquote, throw him open. So let's just give Tua credit there to backtrack to that throw. But look at the speed on Tyreek Hill and realize that when Jalen Waddle, who was at practice today, didn't have any sleeves on his legs today. So I think his hammies and all that soft tissue issue is a little bit overblown there in terms of injuries, hopefully for fantasy football reasons, if nothing else. But realize that that's what we're dealing with now. I mean, that's what we have. We've got speed up and down and left and right. We have, you know, the bodies with Mike Gesicki and Cedric Wilson and some of these other bigger guys. It's going to be fun to watch this offense. I mean, I know we're sounding like a broken record right now, Chris, but it's hard not to with what we got.
Yeah. First of all, it's preseason. So like, of course we're gonna be optimistic, but second of all, yeah, there's a lot of speed out there. If you watch that preseason game and saw Raheem Mostert's 27, 28 yard run, man, was he fast. And you know what I love about his speed? He's confident in it, right? So he gets that block. He gets the outside, two guys in front of him. Instead of like trying to cut inside and make a move, he just said, see a beeline to the sideline, outran him. It was, there's speed galore. The underneath routes are going to be so open. It's going to be insane. And it's funny. We've mentioned on the show, Sam, we've watched other NFL offenses and been like, how come we can't get guys, you know, that open dragging across the middle or on a hitch route? Well, we're about to.
Yeah, and the other thing about Raheem Mostert that I really liked about this, and I didn't pick up on it originally, but somebody else did, he picked up his blocks. I mean, at one point, you had two defenders from the Eagles coming through the same gap, and you had the linebacker, I think it was the outside linebacker and the inside linebacker. Inside linebacker got there first, and Raheem Mostert didn't wait, have any indecision. He took the guy that was coming through the hole first, and he put his body on that body, and he knew, basically, I'm going to hit this guy because it's going to take the guy who's coming in after him longer to get to Tua, and Tua can now recognize and throw that ball. And that's exactly what happened. Tua got rid of the ball before he got hit. And I think in the past, we may have had a running back stand there and go, oh shit, which one am I supposed to pick up? What's my assignment? And then all of a sudden, both guys are hitting Tua, and Tua's getting sacked or fumbling or whatever the case may be. And it was a little thing like that that gave me confidence that, you know what, the Chase Edmonds of the world, the Raheem Mosterts of the world, they know what they're doing, not only when they're running with the ball, but when their number's not even being called to get the ball in any given play. It was very subtle, but it was something I went, okay, this is our guy. This is a guy that knows what he's doing back there.
Yeah, it's a very underrated tool for a running back. And it just shows his veteranship, him and Chase Edmonds. And to see how confident and excited they are after being around other offenses and other teams, man, it can't do anything. Check your pulse, right? Mm. Like Mike McDaniel said, check your pulse.
There you go. Check your pulse, ladies and gentlemen. And speaking of which, we got to check our pulse on the okayest fantasy league ever. That's how we're going to end it here. We're going to talk a little bit about this whole draft here, Chris, because as you know, and I know, not everyone else knows, but our fantasy football league is the most okayest fantasy football league in the world. And it's been going on, I think, for now 4 years, and it's on the most okayest fantasy app ever in ESPN's fantasy football, which somehow they made worse. I don't even know how they made their app worse here, Chris, but they did. A couple of differences for our league this year that I'd like to point out. Number one, I decided, without talking to anybody, so a unilateral decision as the commissioner, that we were going to have keepers. And my experience with keepers is you have a keeper and then your normal draft process happens. So for me, I kept Debo Samuel. I was going to draft eighth. I would pick up somebody eighth. No, that is not how ESPN runs their keepers. Their keepers, unbeknownst to me, means, oh, that's your first round draft pick. So I got skipped over for my first round draft pick because I kept Debo Samuel, which I probably would not have picked at eighth overall. But so be it. I guess that's how it goes. Not everybody knew that they were keeping keepers because my email didn't go to everyone in the league like I thought it did, even though I said send everybody in the league an email as to what the rule changes are. So some people had keepers, some people didn't. And then, oh, by the way, somehow set the timer to 10 seconds in between picks.
You better do your research.
Everyone's complaining. They're like, it's not enough time. And I'm like, oh, settle down, bitch. Just, you know, do your research. And then it came to when I actually got to pick. And I'm like, oh, it's just like automatically picked a running back for me because I didn't have time to push the button as to who I wanted to draft. So a comedy of errors, which is why it's not the best fantasy league ever. It's the okayest, Chris.
Yeah. And let's be honest. We wouldn't want that any other way. I mean, could you imagine just another boring, normal fantasy draft? That's not what we do here at Perfectville. We're not your normal, boring podcast. So why would we be your normal, boring fantasy draft? And to top that off, Sam, we've been doing this podcast for a very long time. I'm the co-host of it. I am the doctor. I'm the two-time Hall of Famer. And I watched House of the Dragon and missed the fantasy draft. I told my wife hours prior. All right, got Sam. You got the podcast draft. The podcast I'm so passionate about and care about and put so much time into for over half a decade. And here's some fans in it. Like I got fans of me and my show in this podcast fantasy league. At least show up to the draft. And at 9:35, 35 minutes after it started, I went, oh, fuck. The podcast league started. I'm watching House of the Dragon. Sorry about that, guys. Sorry I missed it. I will be actively involved during the season. Funny thing is, Sam, I think it auto-picked better than I would have.
Isn't that a bitch? That's the bitch.
So my team, I got Kyler Murray. I've got J.K. Dobbins, C.D. Lamb, Mike Williams, Pat Freiermuth, Drake London, the Saints defense, Matt Gay. Oh, and I skipped over my starting running back, Christian McCaffrey, who, if stays healthy, is a 1,000-and-1,000 guy. Bench has Lockett, Boyd, Fields, Henderson, Gallup, and Chubb Hubbard. So
not bad.
Yeah, loving that roster, by the way. So thank you.
It even got you a handcuff of Chubba Hubbard to Christian McCaffrey.
Correct.
Christian McCaffrey goes out. Yeah, I didn't have as much luck. I mean, I don't hate my team. I hate my team. I got Justin Herbert of all the fucking things. I get Herbert being a host of the Dolphins.
You mean Tua Tagovailoa? That's his name now.
Yeah, yeah. Javonte Williams, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So I'll get 3 weeks out of him. Deebo Samuel, who I kept. AJ Brown, after all the shit talking he did last week before the Eagles game, I get AJ Brown, Mike Gesicki, Cordarrelle Patterson, who's probably a one-hit wonder, Bengals defense, Tyler Bass, so a Buffalo Bills player, and then I got James Cook, Tua Tagovailoa on my bench, George Pickens, who I believe is a rookie, Mark Ingram the second, who I didn't realize was still in the league, Devontae freaking Parker, Dubs, whatever, from Green Bay, who I guess is a wide receiver, and Eric Ezukanma, who was the guy that I picked because I'm going to pick him, even though he's not going to do anything. But the shit talking is already happening here, Chris. I already, Cody O'Day, who, by the way, a couple of these guys, we were planning on doing a podcast of the draft with everyone. It didn't work out because of a number of reasons, but Cody O'Day already came out and said, "You knocked me out of the playoffs last year, Sam. I've been training while looking at a picture of you hung up at my gym ever since. I hope to square up in week one. Kelsey isn't here to drop 41.1 on me again." I'm like, wow, he went down to the decimal point as to what Kelsey did. We damaged him last year. My team did, but he's coming after me week one. The shit talking is happening. It's going to be a fun year for the OKS league ever.
Yeah. And just shows how serious our fans take this league. And I'm watching the Targaryens ride dragons. Sorry, guys.
Well, that's what it is. We got fantasy football. We got regular football. We got college football, Chris. Your son's got high school football. It's just football, football, football all the way around. It's a good time to be a football fan. It's the most wonderful time of the year. And we're just one short week away from actual games mattering. And oh, by the way, we have a rooting interest on that opening Thursday night game, ladies and gentlemen, because it is the defending Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams against the stupid, awful Buffalo Bills. I'm never, ever going to root harder for an LA Rams victory than I am right now for this Thursday night game. It would be great to start the season with Buffalo Bills in last place. Chris, anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
That's it.
Well, on behalf of Chris, myself, the entire Believe Network, streaming on SiriusXM, the only thing left to say is goodbye from Perfectville.
Later.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
No se trata de tener suficientes papitas de McDonald's. Se trata de tener suficiente ketchup para asegurarte que cada papita tenga un turno. A menos que te atrevas a comer las papitas sin ketchup. Psst, te prometo que igual te seguirán encantando. Para pa pa pa.